I'd like to talk a little bit first about the purpose of this class. First of all, welcome back, and it's nice to see everybody again. And I thought to just go over where this class is in your life, you know, where it should be in your life, what its function should be in your life, okay? I'd say, personally, that there are four activities that are very important for your life, for your happiness. And this is only one of them, okay? This is what I would, you know, this is called study. In Tibetan, it's terpa. And it's formal study. It's where you go to a class, you actually sit, and you go through a formal class of study. And that's very important. It's very important to do it with a qualified person, and it's very important to do it seriously. Okay, and so these classes are kind of serious. If you've never been to one before, it's a little bit demanding. It only goes for like 6 or 7 weeks, and you have to put out a little bit. If it becomes too much for you, you're welcome to come to the Friday night class. It's what we call the cookie class. But this class is a little demanding, and you should give it some time. And you have to work hard at it. And, you know, I'm always in this thing, should I make it easier? And then I decide, no, I shouldn't. Okay, it should be hard. It's going to be a little hard. Okay, and you have to give it some time. It's not like other things in New York. It's not like a movie, okay? And so, study, you have to do study seriously. And you have to do it the old way. The book we are using is 13 centuries old. And we're not going to change it. It's fine. Okay? So, you have to give it some time. You have to work hard. If you miss two classes, if you miss more than two, you can't come back. You're allowed to miss two, okay? And we're going to be quite strict about it, all right? You can miss two. Even missing two is very lousy, because you won't be able to pass this thing on to your students. Part of the function of learning this stuff is that you can pass it on to other people. Every time you miss a class, there's something about anger or whatever we're covering that you won't hear about, and you won't be able to pass it on. And then there'll be one more hole in the teaching as it's passed down. And rather than having holes in the teaching, we want to make it more complete. We want to make it even more complete than the way it was given to us. We don't want it to get less and less every generation. So try not to miss any. If you miss more than two, don't come. Okay? And you can come back in the fall. All right, or you can come to the Friday night class. But make it a little strict and be a little strict with yourself, okay? It takes a lot of work to have a class like this. And I'll talk a little bit about the people who helped pull it off. And you from your side have to try and work hard at it. Okay, so that's study. Second is daily practice. You must have a daily practice, okay? Meaning some kind of meditation in the morning, some prayers that you do, some daily discipline in your own life. Otherwise, this stuff doesn't work. You know, you can go to a class, you can answer all the questions on the homework, you can do the final exam, but if you don't have a daily practice where you're practicing, say, an hour or an hour and a half a day, where you're specifically meditating an hour a day, at least 2 hours is better, it's almost useless. It almost doesn't mean anything, okay? So I encourage each person to have a daily practice. If you don't have any idea what to do for daily practice, we're going to have a Monday night review of how to do a daily practice. So you can check with John, but I think it's 7 o'clock on Monday nights at the 6th Street Center. But if you're not doing some daily practice, or, you know, older students, normally you go through these cycles where you're doing one nice and then for a couple months you don't do one. You need to have a daily practice. Otherwise, this stuff doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You've got to have a daily practice. Okay? Third, you have to be meditating. Okay? Study by itself is not enough. You must learn to meditate. You must be able to get into a deep state of meditation. You have to study how to do that. And then you have to practice it. And if you have problems or questions, you should talk to one of the older students or make an appointment. We can go over stuff. But you must have a daily meditation. You must be able to meditate on a daily basis. You must be in deep meditation about an hour a day, or this stuff doesn't work. Okay? You have to. You have to figure out how you're going to do that. And you have to figure out how you're going to find time to do that. Okay, you will find time to die. It will come. Everything else doesn't mean anything. Your job is worthless. My company was sold last week. I read about it in the newspaper. It happens. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, it all goes away, trust me. You have to have time to meditate. You have to make time to meditate. This stuff does not work unless you make some time to meditate. That includes retreats. I think ideally, I like to think that two retreats a year of a month each. Okay, how can I do that with my job? Get another job. You have to do retreats. Okay, sooner or later you have to get into retreats. All right. Those of you who've had 3 or 4 years now, you should be starting your retreats, and they will last until you die. Okay, and you must find the time. You must find a way. There's always some clever way to trick your boss. I know. I did it for 15 years. You can do it. You just have to decide that you're going to do it, and you need that time. Your whole life will change if you take that time. Amazing things will happen if you take that time. But you must find a way to make that time. Okay? But without meditation and without retreats, what we're going to do here doesn't work much. Okay? Laboratory studies. Okay? Otherwise known as work. Okay? People ask me, why did you work in an office for 15, 16 years? I said, there's no better place for a Dharma person than a New York City office. You know, because all the jealousy, all the desire, all the hatred, all the anger, you get real life practice. And that's what number 4 is, real life practice. You know, as a Dharma person, you need it. Okay? Maybe you get it at home. If you have a big family, it's better. Okay? Maybe you get it with your cousins. I think almost certainly you get it with a boss or with fellow workers. You know, if you have a fairly large office, I think it's a blessing. But you must have some real life thing going on. You know, it's no good to sit in a cave and read Shantideva's patience chapter because there's no one to piss you off, you know? Except yourself, which works sometimes. But you got to have that practice. You got to have some place where you can work on it. And work is wonderful. You know, an office is wonderful. I think even if you had a lot of money, when I went to work, I had lots of money already. But it was just, Rinpoche said, go work, you know, it'll be good for you. And it is good for you, and you should try it. It's very beneficial. You can give the money to charity or something. But very important to have a real life situation where you can practice. I think every person in this room needs all 4 of those. So I like to teach. I like to go through the text. I like what we're going to do tonight. But by itself, it won't do much. Okay, if you don't have a daily practice, it's not going to work much. If you're not meditating, if you're not learning to get into a deep state of meditation, and if you're not starting to do retreats, it won't work much, and you will not reach your goals. And then finally, you need other people. You need nice, irritating fellow workers, bosses, spouses, kids, you know, people who can bring out the worst in you so you can practice, okay? You must have it, okay? If you can't find any place, come to the Dharma Center, and there's always a few special students waiting for you, you know. So you must have those 4. Okay, you must have this for. All right. We're going to work on the study part today, and I'll go over the book. This is the second series of a 3-course year, and we are studying the following book. It's by Master Shantideva, which in Tibetan is Shiva Tha. Shanti means peace, Deva means like angel or God, okay? And Shiva Tha wrote this book. His date is about 700 AD. The book you're going to study, and it's very embarrassing if you meet a Tibetan and he asks you, what are you studying, and you don't know what you're studying, is Chinjuk. The short name is Chinjuk. In Sanskrit, by the way, I'll put up the Tibetan. You're not required to do the Tibetan. I like it if you try to do the Tibetan. I've never met anyone who couldn't do Tibetan if they tried it. There's a beginner course on Friday evening if you don't know the alphabet and you want to try. But all of the people in this room who know Tibetan started like you maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago. The person who teaches it started about 4 years ago. You can do it. So I really encourage you to do the Tibetan if you can. It's a lot of extra work, and you get the rewards from it. About less than 0.01% of the holy scriptures in Tibetan are translated into English. And those are lousy translations, in my modest opinion. So it's just never going to open up to you in this lifetime unless you learn some Tibetan. So try. Okay, I don't even mind if you do it in this sound first and try to answer your homework questions in this sound. But if you have any aptitude for languages or if there's any chance you could do it, try. Don't be lazy. Okay? I think last course there was a little dip in the number of people answering in Tibetan. So I want to give those people a hard time. All right? So don't be lazy. Just go for it. Okay? Say Chunjuk. You got to make noise. Okay? Chunjuk. Chunjuk. Okay, chu means activities, meaning charya in Sanskrit. And charya means what do bodhisattvas do? Okay, bodhisattva charya means the kinds of activities that bodhisattvas engage in. What is it that bodhisattvas do with their lives? Okay, how do they spend their lives? What kind of activities do they do? Juk is the Tibetan for avatara. In Yiddish, juk is roach. But anyway, avatara means to get into something or to start doing something. And it's what the book you're studying is literally called getting into the activities of bodhisattvas, learning how to act like a bodhisattva. And it's a whole book about how to act like a bodhisattva. It's probably the most famous book about how to be a bodhisattva. And you'll see why if you survive the whole 10 classes. It's an extraordinary book for learning how to live in the world as a bodhisattva. How to be a good Buddhist in your office and in New York City. It's an extraordinary book for that. And it's probably been reprinted and more commentaries on it than any other Buddhist book in history, I would say. It's very, very famous. Okay? We're going to study a commentary by say Gyaltabje was a main disciple. He's the right-hand man of Jetsun Kapa, who is the founder of our lineage, of the Dalai Lama's lineage. He was the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, and this is his main disciple. This was his first throne holder. And if you see a picture of Jetsun Kapa, he's always on Jetsun Kapa. He's his right-hand man, Gyaltabje. Okay, and his dates, which you should know, which I don't know. And he wrote a book called, by the way, this is the boring part, but I think it's good because I like you to be aware that I'm not using anything from my own, I'm not making up any of this, okay? We only use in these classes the original texts, the original scriptures, okay? So this way you know where it's coming from. Say, Gyalse, Jungo, Gyalse, Jungo. Gyal means Buddha. It's another word for Buddha. Se means a son or a daughter. So Gyalse means a son or a daughter of the Buddha, children of the Buddha. And this is a word in Tibetan for bodhisattva. It means bodhisattva. Okay. What's a bodhisattva? Long story. But basically a person who has decided to devote their life to becoming enlightened so they can help other people. Okay. Junglo is a very unusual word in Tibetan that is the place. In Tibet there's no bridges, or there used to be no bridges. And Tibet was full of rivers. So every 5 miles, if you're taking a long trip, every 5 miles you're running into a river. And you have to walk up and down the river and see where the Junglo is. So what's the Junglo? The Junglo is like the most convenient place to enter a river to get to the other side. If you're on foot, you know, you will spend half a day if you want to keep your pack dry, and your yak can't swim, you know. you will walk up and down the riverbank and you'll try to find the most shallow place and the most convenient place to cross the river. And that was a great art in Tibet. It was trying to find the jungok, you know, and you would walk up and down and test the water and walk out for a while. And so Gyaltsev J decided to name his book The Jungok for Children of the Buddhas, meaning, you know, the best entry point. This is, if you want to be a bodhisattva, this is the most convenient place to enter. Okay? This is the best place to come to. Okay? Those are the books we're going to study. We will have the root text is in poetry. And it will be, actually we're going to try something new. We have a very distinguished poet. Hector is a very good poet, and he's agreed to actually read the lines before each explanation. And the way we're going to do these three chapters, which we're going to do during this class, is that they are in the form of contemplations. Gyaltsev J has divided them up in a form that lends itself to contemplations. So there'll be, for example, the first night, tonight, there'll be six different contemplations. And the way we'll do it is I'll ask you to close your eyes. Then Hector will come out and take the money out of your purses. Hector will go, will come up and he'll read the verse. And I want you to think about it when he reads it. You know, you think about the verse and then we'll just have a moment of silence. And that's like a contemplation. And then I'll explain the verse the way Gyaltsev J does. And then he'll read the verse again, and then you kind of lock it into your mind. And that's the way we're going to do it. We are not covering the whole Bodhisattva Charavatara. When I was taught it by Ken Rinpoche, it took 10 years. We don't have that kind of time. So what we're doing is we are taking the major contemplations out and turning them into contemplations. So there'll be six different subjects to contemplate on in the next few days for you. And then on the second class, there'll be six more subjects. And they're very, very sweet, and they're very profound. And that's the way the course will go. So your main homework is to go home, pick the contemplation that fits your own negativities, and then work on that. And that will be the main homework, actually, will be to contemplate. In Tibetan and in Buddhism, you learn things through Te Sam Gom. Say Te Sam Gom. Te means you hear it in class. And it requires many, many classroom hours. To really get a good Buddhist education requires thousands of hours in the classroom. Sam means you go home and you think about it. And that will be the contemplation part. Gom means you go into a deep state of meditation and you try to internalize what you decided during your contemplations. And that's a process that you have to go through. Okay. So that's the way we'll be doing it. So I think we'll just start like that. Are you ready? I think next time we'll try to have another mic over here. Oh, you have? Okay. All right. So we're going to start with the first contemplation. And Hector will read it. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. By the way, I'm not going to go through the syllabus is self-explanatory. We are going through three of the most important chapters. These are probably the three sweetest chapters of Buddhism ever written. And it's an honor to teach it, and it's an honor to hear it. It's very, very, very sweet, and it has a profound effect on your life. We're going to do patience, the perfection of patience, which is the art of not getting angry. Okay, and it's a very necessary art for a Buddhist. We're going to cover that chapter. Then we'll cover the art of joy. You know, how to find joy in being good, which in Buddhism is called effort, joyful effort. You know, how to get yourself excited about being a good bodhisattva. And then the third one will be meditation, how to meditate. It's one of the best presentations on meditation in all of Buddhism. So those are the subjects of this course. We'll be covering those three chapters. We'll do three classes on patience, three classes on joyful effort, and then four classes on meditation. Okay. So we'll start out with, this will be the first verse about patience, the perfection of patience, which is the third perfection of the sixth. Okay, so please close your eyes. Listen carefully. You're going to get some kind of idea about it when he reads it. And then I'll explain it, and then I want him to read it again. So close your eyes, be quiet. He'll read, then we'll stay silent for a minute, then I'll start explaining it, okay? So just the first six lines in the English, yeah? Okay.
A single instance of anger destroys whatever good deeds you may have amassed in thousands of eons spent in practices like giving and making offerings to those who have gone to bliss. There is no kind of deed as evil as the act of anger. There is no no spiritual hardship like patience. Practice it then. Concentrate on patience in many different ways.
Okay, you can open your eyes again. The first contemplation is called Anger Destroys Good Karma. And these are the opening lines of Shantideva's chapter. And he said something very radical. He says, a single occurrence of anger in a human being's mind destroys 1,000 eons of good karma. Okay? Like all the good deeds you've done over a kalpa, an eon. Okay? I think we calculated a kalpa during the Abhidharma class. Do you remember? What was it? He says 10 to the 60th power. Like 10 with 60 zeros on it years. I think it's longer than that. I think that that's actually a different thing. Anyway, call it millions and millions of years, if you believe in past lives. Definitely all the goodness you've collected in this life. Okay. According to Shantideva, a single occurrence of sharp anger can destroy that much good karma. Okay. What's the use of good karma? Well, anything you eat that you like, any friend you have that you like, anything at work that you like, anything about your face or your body that you like, any intelligence that you have, any understanding that you have, it is all good karma. It's all produced by good karma. If you wipe out the thing that's producing that, you can be sure that you'll be unhappy, ugly, stupid, have a lousy job, meet bad people on the subway, you know, all these things will happen to you, really. Okay, it's good karma that's protecting you from those things. And a single instance of anger destroys those. Okay? It has the power, according to Shantideva. Now, is Shantideva exaggerating or what? Okay? Because it doesn't seem possible that you could wipe out that much good karma that fast. Or that we even have that much good karma to wipe out that fast. Okay? Chandrakirti, in his classic on Madhyamika, Madhyamika Avatar, he says exactly the same thing. Okay? He says exactly the same thing. And other sutras say exactly the same thing. He's not exaggerating. Okay? It's not for effect. It's actually real. He's actually describing what happens when you get angry. Okay? Now, what is anger? You know, how often do you have anger? How often do you have that kind of anger? Okay, we have to discuss it. Like, I was in traffic recently, and I was really getting angry. I even threw something at somebody. I was really getting angry. And then I was wondering when I was doing this chapter, you know, how often do I get angry? Because I like to think that my problem is desire, not anger, okay? We all have one or the other or both, okay? And we all have ignorance. But how often do you get angry? Anger in this chapter, as you'll see, refers also to that low-level irritation that comes in your mind. Okay? That low level of irritation at people and at things, like traffic jams, or the heat, or something that you stub your toe on. But these are all forms of anger. Okay? Are they the anger that destroys all the good karma? No. Okay? This is a very special anger. This anger has to be very powerful, and it must be focused at a bodhisattva. Okay, the anger which destroys thousands and millions of years of good karma, according to all the sources, has to be focused at a bodhisattva. Okay, so think of the last time you got angry at somebody, and tell me, were they a bodhisattva? Rinpoche likes to go like that. That means, I don't know. Okay, that's the tricky part. You don't know who's a bodhisattva. You really don't know who's a bodhisattva. Okay? As you'll learn later in this chapter, it's considered good etiquette for bodhisattvas to stay underground. You know, it's considered very good bodhisattva etiquette for bodhisattvas never to admit that they're bodhisattvas. Okay, so you really don't know who's a bodhisattva. Pabongkor Rinpoche used to say that probably the person sitting next to you is a bodhisattva, if not a Buddha. You know, and you don't know. You just don't know. So you have to be extremely careful. So what he's saying is that one powerful instance of anger focused at a bodhisattva has the power to destroy thousands of years of good karma. Okay, how does it do it? I mean, we study that in the monastery. It's a debate when you study the first chapter of the Madhyamika Avatara. And it has to do with the intensity with which your mind grasps to something as self-existent. Okay, there's something very powerful about the intensity with which your ignorance has to operate in order to be that angry at somebody. Okay, to be really angry at somebody, ignorance must be at its peak. Okay, and that ignorance plants itself in your mind. You have to be perceiving the world in a very, very mistaken way to get angry. And for the length of time that you're angry, you are bathing in a very sublime form of ignorance. Okay, because you cannot get angry if you're not ignorant. And conversely, when you are getting very angry, your ignorance is very much planting itself in your mind and ruining your mind. Okay, so ignorance is just a barometer. I mean, anger is a barometer for the intensity of your own ignorance. The more angry you get, the more tendency you have towards anger, the more you are grasping to things as self-existent. And we'll talk about that more. Okay, so that's the very first line. Shantideva and Gyaltabje go into the destruction that anger does to you that you can see, and the destruction it does that you cannot see. The destruction that you're aware of, and the destruction that you're not aware of. Okay, up till now, up until these few minutes, you probably weren't aware that you're destroying thousands and thousands of years of good karma just by getting angry once. Okay, that's something you wouldn't guess. And Shantideva and Gyaltabje call it matoi nimik. It's something about anger that you and I, it's not obvious to us. It doesn't seem like that. Okay, but if you continue the habit of anger over a lifetime, it'll start to affect. Tongyur kile means there's a karmic effect which occurs even in this life. Before you die, your world will start to get lousier. You know, people will seem worse. Food will seem less tasty. Dharma teachings won't affect you much. Everything seems lousy. Your own face will start to change. Your own physical body will start to change. Anger has all these effects on you. In the secret teachings, we could go into it. It has a very profound effect on your spiritual body, and it's ruining your spiritual body. Those thoughts have a certain physical effect on your spiritual body, and start ruining that. Start choking off certain channels that have to be moving. And so you just naturally get less happy, and your world starts to change, and you don't know why. Okay? I mean, you walk into a store with one of these people, and the guy yells at them and serves you nicely. And then you walk outside and somebody almost hits them with a car, and somebody else is giving you some money. And their whole life is like that. And they never figure it out. This is called matoi nimik. Okay? This is a karmic result that you are not aware of. If someone didn't explain it to you, you wouldn't guess. But it's slowly making your life deteriorate. Your physical appearance, your happiness, everything about your life is starting to deteriorate. Everybody seems worse. Every situation is worse. Everything seems less happy. And these are all effects of you destroying your good karma. Okay? It's the anger which is destroying your good karma and actually changing your reality. So if you don't like your reality, stop getting angry. Alright? That's the matoi nimik. That's a problem that you cannot see. It has to be explained to you, and you have to work it out logically. Okay, now we'll go on to... by the way, and then he says, there is no evil in the world like anger. Nothing has that power to destroy good karma like anger. And Shantideva says, there is no act that a person can do which is as evil as anger. And there's also no spiritual practice that is as amazing as patience. You know, when someone's giving you a hard time, screaming at you, trying to get you, trying to ruin your reputation, doing something to you, there's no spiritual austerity, there's no spiritual act as high as keeping your patience and not getting angry. Shantideva says, I don't care about those people meditating in caves for 10 years. Who cares? You know, that doesn't make you a warrior. That doesn't make you a tough guy. That doesn't make you a spiritual Superman. You know, what makes you that is if you can sit in your office and your boss comes to you and screams at you and you can keep your patience and you can keep your joy, then you are a spiritual Superman. I don't care about those guys that can go sit in a cave for 10 years. That's not a spiritual austerity. That's not a spiritual achievement. He says just to keep your patience in your everyday life is much more a sign of high realizations than anything else. He's not impressed by people who can go sit in the snow for 3 hours or something like that. So that's not the thing. You want to show me a great Buddhist? Show me someone who can keep their cool under fire and understand why they're doing it. And that's a great Buddhist. Okay. That's a really great Buddhist practitioner. And you can do that everywhere. It's great. New York is very it's very good for that. Okay. Now we go on to the problems that you can see. And by the way, you'll see in the reading that Shantideva and Geltabjay, they take great pains to bring up other scriptures and other quotations from the Buddha to prove that they're not exaggerating and that you really do destroy massive amounts of good karma by being angry for a short period. Okay, and it goes on to say, even if you were angry at an ordained person, so maybe nobody would be angry at us anymore, but they say if you prostrated on the ground and you counted all the atoms on the ground that you were covering, and then you went down to the disk of gold, which I think is what, 80,000 miles? I don't remember. 240,000 miles, something like that. If you counted all the atoms down to the bottom of the earth that you cover with your body when you prostrate, and if each one of those atoms was enough good karma to make you king of the world, unanimous king of the world, everybody in the world is begging you to be king of the world. Okay? Multiply that times 1,000. That's the amount of good karma you destroy if you speak badly of an ordained person or get angry at them once. Okay? That, he quotes that. Doesn't even have to be a good ordained person. I mean, Madhyamika Avatara says, your accusation can even be true. It's not the point. You have to be very, very careful with that. And then he says, obviously anger at anyone has similar results. Okay. By the way, that's 100 eons for every occurrence. Okay. If you are a bodhisattva and get angry at another bodhisattva, it's 1,000 eons. If you're not a bodhisattva and you get angry at a bodhisattva, there's all these permutations. Okay. That's the effects of anger that you cannot see. And if you believe what I said, you know, once you get aware that good karma is creating your life, every detail of your life, everything you like about your life is being created by good karma. You want to protect that good karma very, very carefully. You do not want to lose 1,000 years of effort by getting angry at your boss for an hour. You know, you want to protect your good karma. You want to, I mean, it should be coming into your mind now, you know, how can I avoid that? You know, are there some kind of super tricks that you can teach us that I can avoid destroying my good karma? You know, and if you overcome anger, the opposite happens. Your good karma keeps, the store of good karma keeps powerful. Food starts tasting better. Music starts tasting better. Your body starts feeling better. Your boss is yelling less. You keep getting raises. And you start realizing things in your Dharma class that you never understood before. And that's what happens if you can stop anger. If you can stop destroying your good karma, all these things will start happening to you. It's very interesting. Your world just starts to improve. In the middle of this stinky New York City, your world, your reality starts to change. And that's the whole point. Okay? Now, what does anger do to us that we can see? Okay? What can you see in your life that anger does? And Hector's going to read the... do the first one again, though. Do it. He's going to read the first one again, then close your eyes and think about it again. Okay? Ready? Close your eyes.
A single instance of anger destroys whatever good deeds you may have amassed in thousands of eons, spent in practices like giving or making offerings to those who have gone to bliss. There is no kind of deed as evil as the act of anger. There is no spiritual hardship like patience. Practice it then. Concentrate on patience in many different ways.
So that's one way to teach it. It's called Thokpa. You know, you just got one Thokpa. You just got one realization. You know, from all that last 15 minutes, it should have occurred to you, I didn't realize that a few minutes of anger could destroy that much good karma. So it should be kind of scary. You know, if you got a Thokpa just now, Thokpa means a realization, you know. If it just occurred to you that I didn't ever understand that anger was that. I knew that anger made me uncomfortable and all that. But I didn't have any idea that it was so destructive of my good karma. So that's, you have to think like that. Okay, that's a Thokpa. That's one way of teaching a class. It's called a Nyamchi. Okay. Next one. Close your eyes. I think just the first six lines.
If you hold to the sharp pain of thoughts of anger, your mind can know no peace. You find no happiness, no pleasure. Sleep stays away and the mind remains unsettled.
Okay, in this verse he's starting to introduce the problems that you can see. And you don't have to be an Einstein to figure these out. Okay? And he gives five problems to start with. He says, first of all, your mind can know no peace. Your mind will not be peace, at peace. Gyatabjay explains that as meaning you will never get to the point where you find peace beyond all suffering, meaning nirvana. Okay, so this is not just not feeling good. It means you will never figure out what it is to be in nirvana. If you're constantly being angry, you will never reach nirvana. First problem. Second problem, you will find no happiness. And Gyaltabjay and the Indian commentaries say, here, Master Shantideva is talking about how it ruins your mental state. You know, mentally you won't be happy. You can't be happy. As long as you have anger. I mean, the slightest bit of anger you ever get, you know, melts away your happiness. You can't goof around anymore, you know. Like you've been angry at somebody and it stays with you for, I don't know, stays with me for like a couple hours. It just ruins my life for a couple of hours. If I get fairly angry at someone, I just can't think a happy thought for a couple of hours. I can't do it. And it's probably similar with you. No pleasure means, third problem, physically it starts to hurt your body. Okay? Physically you know, you start to shake a little bit, your heart starts pounding, your stomach feels bad, and as long as you keep up the anger, you will never find even a normal state of physical well-being. Much less Xinjiang. Xinjiang is some kind of very, very high feeling of your body that you get from meditation. Okay? So anger, first of all, stops you from even normal feeling good physically and absolutely prevents you from Xinjiang. You'll never get to Xinjiang. As long as you have any kind of anger, which is one of the, nirsam is one of the five obstacles to meditation. You know, thinking angry thoughts about someone ruins your meditation. You will never get to the point where you have this extraordinary bliss, physical bliss that meditation can bring you. You'll never get there. So anger is blocking you from even normal feeling good, and then absolutely blocking you from deeper physical feeling of very deep meditation. You'll never get there. Okay. Then he says you can't sleep, and you know that. Okay, I you know, there used to be a vice president at work that really irritated me, and I would spend nights when I couldn't sleep. And I know what it feels like, and it's bad. It's very bad. Then he says the mind remains unsettled. And Gyaltabjay's commentary says Neldapapa means, very rare word, but it means you're off balance. You're always feeling off balance. You know, you're always feeling a little bit off. You know, your mind can't focus, your mind can't stay steady on an object, your mind can't center itself. Because anger is always throwing you off balance. Anger is always pushing you around. Okay, and these are things that you can see in this life. These are effects of anger that you can see. And they're very, very unpleasant. Okay, say it again. Close your eyes.
If you hold to the sharp pain of thoughts of anger, your mind can know no peace. You find no happiness, no pleasure. Sleep stays away and the mind remains unsettled.
Okay, next two verses. Yeah. Close your eyes. Here's the next one.
Suppose there were a master who bestowed upon all those within his care both wealth and honor as they wished. Still, they'd rise to kill him if he lived in fury. It leaves your friends and family tired of being with you. They refuse to stay on, even though you may entice them with gifts.
So Shantideva and Gyatavjaya, they divide this section into two parts. One is, anger ruins your own happiness. Anger ruins your happiness and your physical well-being. A. B. It ruins your relationships. Okay? It destroys relationships with friends and family. Okay? Whatever good relationships you have, the more angry you get, the more it will destroy your life in terms of your relationships. So it destroys you, first of all, and then it destroys whatever good relationships you have. You know, and I know, I've had friends for 10 years and blown it in a 10-minute screaming session with them. You know what I mean? I mean, 10 minutes of true anger between two people can ruin years of friendship. And you never forget what they said because you think it's what they really thought for 10 years. And usually it's not, but you never forget what they said because it's so bad. You know, but this is the effects of anger. It ruins your relationships. Shantideva gives the example of a man who's running a big estate or like a little lord of a little kingdom. And he's taking care of all his subjects very carefully. He's a good man. He's taking care of them. He's feeding them. He's bringing them up. And I think he's referring to family life also, you know, like daddy is taking care of the kids, feeding them, taking good care of them, nice to them. But daddy has a problem. He gets angry. You know, he has these very intense periods of anger. And what will happen? In the example of the lord of an estate, if that person, even though he's kind and even though he's supporting everybody, there could come a point where all those people working there and living there would actually murder him. Okay? In a family situation, he says, next verse, he says, they don't come and murder you. They murder you in a different way. They get sick and tired of you, and they leave. And they could either leave physically or they could leave mentally, but they disassociate from you. And you find yourself isolated, you know, because you can't control your anger. Even if you're a good daddy, even if you're bringing home the bread, even if you're trying to win them with you know, every time your anger gets over, you take them out for ice cream or something, it doesn't work, he says. They get tired, your friends get tired, you know, you start to lose your friends, you start to lose your family. And eventually they just leave you. They either leave you mentally or in reality. But sooner or later they get tired and they go away. And that's an effect of anger that you can see in this life. Okay? So we'll read the example one more time. And then the other verse one more time. Okay, ready?
Suppose there were a master who bestowed upon all those within his care both wealth and honor as they wished. Still, they'd rise to kill him if he lived in fury. It leaves your friends and family tired of being with you. They refuse to stay on, even though you may entice them with gifts.
Okay, and then he has a summary, which you can go ahead.
To put it simply, there is no one with anger who can be happy. Anger, our enemy, brings us these and other pains as well.
So that's how he presents. So obviously, this chapter begins. He wants you to know what's wrong with anger, the problems of anger. And he says, first of all, there are problems that you never guessed. And that's every moment that you're angry, you are destroying massive amounts of good karma in your mind stream. As a result, your life will become more and more unhappy. And you won't even guess why. You know, things won't taste as good, friends won't be as good, movies won't look as good, books won't seem as nice, music won't sound as sweet. It's very interesting. When you start to destroy your good karma, your whole experience of reality starts to deteriorate. Ultimately, it's called death. Okay? And if you can do the opposite, then the opposite happens. The world starts to transform. Things taste sweeter. Friends are closer. Disciples are very obedient and friendly. Food tastes better. Every music is like unbelievable. And then ultimately, your own body changes. Within this lifetime, with the proper practices, your own body would change into a body of light. And that's the opposite. But it'll never happen if you keep going back 20 steps for every step you go forward. Every time you get angry, you're destroying massive amounts of good karma, and those other things can't happen. You will never reach the state of deathlessness. You will never reach a Buddha paradise. Because you're just destroying karma so effectively that it can't happen. Okay? And those are the benefit. Those are the problems with anger that you can't see. The problems that you can see, even if you don't believe in future lives, if you don't believe in Buddha paradise, you don't believe in karma, anger still sucks. Anger still causes you to have a terrible life. It destroys your relationships, it destroys your own happiness, and it destroys your physical health. So first he wants to lay out all the problems of anger, and he's finished with that. And we'll take a break and come back in like 10 minutes, okay? And then we'll see if there's anything we can do about it. Let's read it while they're writing. Everybody should just say the Tibetan sounds, okay? We used to have this class in a hotel room on one bed. And I always thought the guy next door was wondering what we were doing, you know? Anyway, say Changchu, Sempa, La, Nikpe, Kongto, Chiki, Geta, Sawane, Jom. Changju Sempa means what? Bodhisattva. Okay, Changju Sempa. La, Nikpe means focused on a Changju Sempa, focused on a Bodhisattva. Kontro means anger. I'll write that. Changju Sempa, focused on a Bodhisattva. And this is a direct quotation. Geta. Geta is usually translated as root of virtue, but it refers to the store of good karma that you have in your mind. And there are certain things which can destroy the entire storehouse of good karma. Anger at a bodhisattva is one of them. Geta, Sawane, Jom. Sawane Jom means destroys the entire storehouse of good karma that you have in your mind from the root. Okay. Just destroys it. And that's the scriptural quotation. I'd like you to memorize it, those of you in the Tibetan class. You got to work hard a little bit, okay? I mean, in a real Geshe course, it's hundreds and thousands of pages to memorize. You can do a few lines, and it's good for you. Okay? It's one of those things that hurts at the beginning and feels good later. Like exercise. Yeah. A single occurrence of anger focused at a bodhisattva destroys the entire collection of good karma in your mind from the root. Okay. That's a direct quotation. And again, you think angry people get unhappier as they get older because they're angry, but actually it's because they're burning off good karma. And their world really is getting lousier. It's a true perception they're having. Everyone really is out to get them. You know, the kids really are getting worse. The wife really is getting uglier, you know. The job really is getting more unpleasant. The food really is tasting worse. Their body really is getting more of a heart attack. But it's all because it's not the anger, it's the destruction of their good karma. So all that's left is all their lousy karma. And their life starts to, their reality starts to deteriorate. It really happens. And you can be standing next to them and you're experiencing a totally different reality, a sweet one. Because you're not having anger. You can't understand why they're irritated all the time. Because everything to you looks fine. And everything to you is fine. And everything to them is bad. And that's the reality of karma. Okay, that's how karma works. Okay. Next we get into a verse. This is the third contemplation. We're going to go through six, okay? The last three will probably be faster. The third contemplation is, what causes anger? Okay? What triggers anger? Okay, and Shantideva, Master Shantideva gets into the question of what triggers anger in a person. Okay, if anger is so destructive and so dangerous, we better know what triggers it. Then we can avoid that. Okay. So Hector, the whole page, okay? Close your eyes.
Anger feeds on the food of feeling upset, then strength and turns to smash me. And so then I will smash the sustenance that feeds this enemy of mine. My foe knows no other kind of work at all except to cause me pain. No matter what happens, I will never allow my joy to be disturbed. Feeling upset cannot accomplish my hopes and only makes me lose the goodness that I have. If there is something you can do about it, why should you feel upset? If there is nothing you can do about it, what use is being upset? There is nothing in the world which does not come easily if you make a habit of it. Make then a habit of bearing the small pains and thus endure the greater.
So Master Shantideva is trying to identify what is it that triggers anger. You know, because if you can avoid that, then you'll never get angry. And he identifies getting upset. Okay, it's that bad feeling that starts when something you want to happen doesn't happen, or when something you don't want to happen starts to happen. And it's that off-balance state of mind. It's that you're beginning to get upset that something's not going your way. And it's that that triggers anger. That's the prelude to anger. Anger is always preceded by feeling off-balance or upset. Some kind of unhappiness about the way things are going. This is not actual anger yet. It's some kind of being off-balance or being upset. You could call it being upset. You start to get upset at something, and then that triggers anger. Okay, so he identifies it like that. He identifies getting upset as the food that anger feeds on. And then he says, let's deny anger its food, and it will die. Okay? If you feed anger, if you allow your mind to get upset, if you ever feel off balance or start to feel off balance or you start to feel upset, it gives anger something to eat. It's like dog food. You know, and anger comes in, this is great, you know. And it feeds anger. And the more you get upset or the more off balance you get, the more anger gets strengthened. The word in Tibetan is very rare. It's called depa, and it means to get big muscles. You know, like anger loves to feed off of you getting upset. As soon as you start to get upset, as soon as your mind starts to get off balance a little bit, anger is there feeding, you know, like some wild animal. It's like getting energy out of this. And then it gets stronger and stronger. And then you won't be able to beat it. So Master Shantideva says, let's starve it. You know, don't give him anything to eat, and then he'll die. You know, so what? Don't get upset. Stop getting upset. Alright? And then, you know, that's easy to say, right? Like, don't want to be angry because of traffic? Just don't mind the traffic, you know. Thanks, you know. You know, like, thanks a lot. I needed that, you know. It doesn't work. You know it doesn't work. So then Master Shantideva, in the latter part of the verse, he starts to give arguments why getting upset is stupid and getting upset is useless. First of all, he says, it can't get you anything. Getting upset never accomplishes anything. Getting upset at something never helps you get the spiritual goals and the other things you want. It doesn't get you more money. It doesn't get you more health. It doesn't get you that girlfriend you wanted. Getting upset is useless as far as getting you what you want. It doesn't work. Getting upset doesn't work. And he says you have to think about it and you have to contemplate on that. Getting upset never works. It never helps anything. He says don't do it. Just stop it. Okay? And then anger won't have a place to start. Anger won't have any food to get stronger from. And then he has what I think is one of the sweetest verses in all of Buddhism. His Holiness is always quoting it. I'm going to ask you to memorize it. Okay? It's very short. If you're doing English track, you have to memorize the English. Chösa Yunani Dela Migar Chishik Yu. Okay, kelte means if. Chusu yupa means if it's something you can do something about. Chu means to fix or to repair or to do something about something. You know, if a problem that comes up, if there's somebody at work you don't like, if there's something happening in your life that you're not happy about, if something's upsetting you, kelte chusu yunani, if there's something you can do about it, then dela means about that thing. Migara means to be unhappy or upset. Chishigyo means, what's the point? What's the point? Okay? Which means, if you have a problem that you can do something about, then why get upset? Just go fix it. Okay? Just go and fix it. If something is... What is that? Lord, grant me the grace to... Was it to know the things I can do something about, or know the things I can't do nothing about and have the wisdom to tell the difference? But this is the same thing, okay? So Shantideva is saying, look, if you can do something about it, then just shut up and go do it and stop getting upset. You don't get upset. Why? Upset is the food for anger. Anger needs upset, being upset to feed on. If you never get upset, you'll never get angry. So he's identifying for you the cause of anger. It's feeling upset, feeling unhappy about something. So on the one hand, if you can do something about it, stop being upset. Just go do it. Fix it. Okay? You know what the next part is going to say. Taking Tibetan track, you're going to have to write the verse, okay? And you may notice that most of it's the same on the second two lines as on the first two lines. Say, Kelte, Chusu, Menani, Dela, Miga, Chechipen. Okay. Kelte means if, again, if. Chusu Menani means if you can't do anything about it, there's nothing you can do to fix it. You know? If you've talked to the boss and he won't fire that other person. Okay? Which I tried on occasion. Okay? Dela Miga, to be upset about it or to be unhappy, Chechipen. What's the use? What's the use of being unhappy? What's the use of being upset? Okay. In Tibetan logic, it's kyaba, and there's only munyima do mewa, means you can only go one way or the other. You know, either the thing is fixable or the thing ain't fixable. If the thing is fixable, stop being upset and fix it. If the thing is not fixable and you can't do anything about it right now, shut up and stop being upset. Because if you allow yourself to be upset, anger finds food. And then anger does his thing, and then you destroy good karma, and then you got more things to be angry about because your reality changes. Because your good karma can't assert itself anymore because there ain't any. And then everything seems to be getting worse. I don't know what's happening with this city. More crime, more dirt, subway is worse. It's you. Okay? Crime will drop if you're good. Okay? Yeah. Nothing. He said, does that mean in actuality there's nothing you can't fix? No, I mean there is occasions at work when the guy is the boss's pet and he hates your guts and there ain't nothing you can do about it, so why be upset? You know, just bear with it. You know, smile and grin and bear it, right? Because what's the use of being upset? You can't fix it. He's the boss's pet. There's nothing you can do. You could, like, have a truck run him over or something. But you're a Buddhist, you know. Can't do that. This is very famous. And it's logical. It's very logical. Those two arguments are logical. First one was, feeling upset doesn't help anything. You know, getting mad, feeling upset, getting off balance, being unhappy about anything. Traffic jam, New York City, your life, your body, anything. It doesn't help anything. So just stop it. Because if you stop it, you won't get angry. And then on the other hand, if something's fixable, just shut up and go fix it. If something's not fixable, just shut up and stop whining about it, kvetching, because there's nothing you can do. Stop being unhappy. Stop being upset, and then you won't get angry. So it's totally airtight, logically. It's just to us, we don't want to do it. Right? Okay. Next one, next contemplation. You want to read that? Read just that much one more time, okay? Sorry. No, that's Master Shantideva. That is the most famous one of the most famous verses in the Bodhisattva Charitar, and His Holiness uses it constantly. Okay. Yeah. Back to anger feeds and up to what use is being upset. Okay. Okay, close your eyes. By the way, you're going to have to do this at home, okay? You're going to pick one contemplation and just go over it this way. Okay, ready?
Anger feeds on the food of feeling upset, then strengthen turns to smash me. And so then I will smash the sustenance that feeds this enemy of mine. My foe knows no other kind of work at all except to cause me pain. No matter what happens, I will never allow my joy to be disturbed. Feeling upset cannot accomplish my hopes and only makes me lose the goodness that I have. If there is something you can do about it, why should you feel upset? If there is nothing you can do about it, what use is being upset?
By the way, one thing here from my own practice, you know, there's times when I feel really good, you know, like my spiritual life is rolling, you know, everything is fine, I'm feeling like really energized, and then a person who's close to me and who's spending a couple hours with me gets a mental affliction. And it's obvious, you know, like it's jealousy or anger or desire or something, but I can actually feel some kind of, you know, it's like, ooh, you know. And I'm sure it happens with my friends when I get my mental affliction. But you can be close to them and you actually feel this physical wind coming from them of their mental affliction. And they're sitting next to you having a mental affliction. And you were having a great day. And then suddenly the person next to you is having a mental affliction. And I don't know about you, but I kind of resonate to other people. So if the person next to me is having a bad day and starting to get irritated or upset, it starts to ruin my happiness, you know. The 8 verses says something like that. That's a reason not to have a mental affliction, is that it not only ruins your day, but it spreads to other people. Like, I'm having a perfectly good spiritual day, and my friend is having a mental affliction, or vice versa. I mean, it happens both ways. I was driving a car one day, and I was getting angry, and the person next to me, everybody in this car started to get upset, you know, because I was angry. I mean, what I'm saying is it infects other people. And this practice means keep your joy. The antidote, there's a homework question. The antidote for getting upset is joy. Maintain your own joy, your own sense of joy. And it's very difficult. And it becomes very much a kind of an internal struggle. But keep your own joy. Even if everybody on the subway around you is getting mad, you know, even if everybody on the street is too hot, you know, even if everybody at work is stressed out because the company's merging or something, you know, you must maintain your own joy. You have to shield your joy from the influence of other people's mental afflictions. And it's a whole practice. It's a whole spiritual skill that you have to learn. That you can keep your joyfulness and your happiness and refuse to be sucked into other people's mental affliction. And that's very difficult. It's very difficult to do, but it becomes a skill that you have to learn. You know, you must maintain your joy, because if you don't maintain your joy, you will get upset about how stinky everything is. If you get upset, then somebody has a chance to come and feed on you, which is anger. Okay? And if you develop a full anger, then you start to destroy good karma. And then the world really does start to change in your eyes. And it gets lousy. So if you don't want that to happen, don't get anger. If you don't want that to happen, don't give it any food. If you don't want that to happen, don't get upset. If you don't want that to happen, be happy. You know, keep your joy, maintain your sense of joy in yourself. And learn to do that despite what's going on around you. That's a trick. That's a spiritual skill that you have to learn. Okay? And even if everybody else is going crazy, you know, stupid, jealous, angry, attacking you, forget it. Maintain your joy inside. Okay? Have to. Yeah. I think he says, Shantideva gives you three choices, you know. He says, first, understand that getting upset is totally useless. It never helps anything. It has no function in providing you with what you're seeking. A. B, if you can fix it, then go out and fix it. If you can't fix it, then shut up and keep your joy, you know. And that's it. That's airtight. There's no other choice. Yeah. That's a whole different... We had a debate about that in the last class, and Master Shantideva said what? He said, can you take joy in being angry at your mental afflictions. And there was a debate, do you remember, Gelsov Jay? What did he say? He said, you must get angry at your mental afflictions, and that's not anger. It's not anger. It's righteous something. Okay. No, he said you should, and then he said you should have an enemy, and that's your mental afflictions. And then there was this whole debate about whether that was real or mental affliction or not. And there's two commentaries. I mean, there's Sanskrit commentaries that say you should maintain this mental affliction for a short time. And there's other commentaries that say that's wrong. It's not a mental affliction, and you're not maintaining your mental affliction. It's a kind of joy. It's a kind of understanding. And Gelsov Jay sides with the second. Gelsov Jay sides with the latter. Okay. Okay. We're actually going to make it, maybe. Okay. Hector, page 13, the verse there, the whole verse there. Okay. Close your eyes. Contemplation 4. Yeah.
There is nothing in the world which does not come easily if you make a habit of it. Make then a habit of bearing the small pains, and thus endure the greater.
Okay. This is going to be a theme throughout these three chapters that we're studying. And it always starts out with a question. Somebody comes up to Gelsov Jay or Master Shantideva and says, you know, sounds great. I'm not capable of it. You don't know the kind of enemies I have. You know, you don't know the kind of boss I have. You know, you don't know the situations that I have to put up with. Like, maybe normal people, okay. But you have no idea what I have to put up with. And it's impossible. You know, I don't have mentally the strength. I have tried in my life. You know, I'm not stupid. I've tried for 20 years, 30 years to fight with my anger. And these things, these objects are just so bad that they make me angry. And I can't stop it. I can't do it. You know, and then Master Shantideva says, look, everything mental comes from habit. The way you look at things comes from habit. And only from habit. Okay? Which conversely means that if you develop a habit of something, you can see it any way you want. And that's very powerful. That's really powerful. Okay? If you make a habit of something, you can learn to see things any way you want. Okay? Meaning, if you start small, and he's very big on that, Master Shantideva is very big on that, start small. Start with the small things that piss you off. You know, start with small things like the way people look in the subway or something like that. And start to work on your mind. Start to get into the habit of working on it. He said, don't go for your worst enemy first. You know, start with the small things that irritate you and overcome it. Get used to not getting angry. Use logic on yourself, you know, and start small. You know, start with the small things that irritate you and start to see how they could even be helpful or how they're not so bad. Or how if you didn't get irritated, your life would be a lot more pleasant. You know how much time you save if you don't get pissed off? You know, people in New York always want to save time. Like, they're always like, I only got 3 minutes, talk. You know, my boss does that, and then he gives me 1 minute. You know, and he doesn't listen anyway. But everybody wants to save time. You can save about 20% of your lifetime if you learn not to get irritated at people. You know, if you just stop it, and you stop it with small things. And Shantideva says, Master Shantideva says, the way you see anything, the way you think about anything, is totally plastic. It's totally malleable. You can change it to anything you want. And later he's going to say more radical things, like you could change your conception of what you are to extend it to Helen McHale. You know, your habit of thinking of you as stopping at your skin comes from habit. It's not a reality. You can change it if you want. You could decide that she's as important as you. You could decide that she is you. You know, why did you stop at your arm? Why do you stop at your fingers? It's a habit. It's just a habit. And it can be changed by practice. He said, anything is possible with practice. There's nothing you can't do if you practice. And he's very big on that. All the way that you see the world, all the relationships you have, all the way you define yourself and other people and your happiness and their happiness, those borders are not fixed. They're just a habit. It's just a way of thinking, and you can change it. So he says, you can do it. You can perfect patience. You can get to the point where you could stand and someone could put a blowtorch on you and you would be patient. You know, but he said, don't start there. You know, he said, start with the small things that make you unhappy and practice. Just practice. And practice makes perfect. And he's very adamant about it. Practice makes perfect. You can change. I'm going to have somebody else write the Tibetan because I don't have time. Can you write it on here? Okay. So that's number four. He says, get used to bearing with small irritations and then build up to the big ones. And you can do it because there's nothing about your life which is not a perception. And your perceptions are totally dependent on your own habits. You can change any of your perceptions. I was on a bus one time in India. And I was locked in between a bunch of pigs and chickens and farmers in the corner of this bus. And there was a rainstorm and a hole opened up above my head. And it was going... And I could not move. I couldn't move an inch this way or an inch this way. And I was just sitting there for like 4 hours. And I decided, you know, you get used to it. You get used to it. And then after a while I thought, even David Rockefeller, if he was sitting here, if he couldn't move, he would get used to it, you know. And even David Rockefeller would be here sitting with the pigs and the chickens and getting wet. And you get used to it, you know. What I'm trying to say is, Master Shantideva is saying, you can get used to anything if you try. You know, you can bear the greatest insults. You can bear the greatest injuries. People can do terrible things to you. People can hurt you in any way imaginable. But if you practice, you can get to a point where you're just unshakable. And you just cannot be shaken out of your sense of joy. And there'll be a time and there'll be a point in your spiritual career when you'll be able to withstand any kind of attack and maintain your joy. You know, and he says it's just a matter of practice. Okay? Read that one more time, please.
There is nothing in the world which does not come easily if you make a habit of it. Make then a habit of bearing the small pains and thus endure the greater.
When it says there's nothing in the world which doesn't come easily if you make a habit of it, Gyaltsebje, his commentary says, nothing in the world here refers to any kind of mental habit. Nothing in the world means any kind of mental habit you can develop if you practice. You know, you can learn to see things any way you want if you practice. Okay? Those things are not set in stone. Those things are a decision. Those things are a mental state. And some people encounter the same problems you do and come out unscathed. They're quite happy. And the same things that upset you wouldn't upset a stronger person. So become stronger and change the way you look at things. They don't have to be the way you see them. And he proves that with an example. You ready? Next one.
Some, when they catch sight of their own blood, rise to a higher ferocity. Some, when they see another person's blood, faint and fall unconscious. All of this derives from either steadfastness or cowardice in the mind. Learn then to disregard arms and never allow any pain to touch you. Hurt may come, but the wise never let suffering cloud their clarity of mind.
So in this verse, Shantideva, he likes warfare. He likes to use the example of warfare. He says, we are engaged in warfare. And he says, you see some people in a battle, you know, I think of Braveheart, right? And somebody slashes their arm and they see blood pouring out. And they just get more fierce, you know, they say, blood, you know, and then you see football players like that, you know, if they get a good cut on their face, they get excited, you know, and they're like, all right, let me get them, you know, and it just gives them more courage, you know, they like get high on it, you know, or a good boxer. You know, somebody gives him a good cut on the eye, he just gets pissed, you know, and he's just like, you know, and he's ready to go fight stronger, you know. It just gets him excited and more interested, you know. And then some people, you know, they go to the doctor and they see somebody getting an injection and they see a little bit of blood going on. And they fall unconscious. So he says he's picking two kinds of people. One kind of person, when they see their own blood, gets excited, you know, and they get more inspired to slay the enemy. You know, and other people, they see a little blood, somebody's nose bleeding or something, and they get, you know, they get all freaked out. And he says, then he asks a question, Shantideva says, is there any difference in the two people's bodies? You know, is the one guy's body harder than the other guy's body? You know, is the other guy's body softer than the other guy's body? You know, is there a difference in the bodies? No. Okay. Well, is there a difference in the thing that hit them? You know, in the knife or the needle or whatever is that? Is the needle like softer to one guy and harder to the other guy? Or is the knife sharper to one guy or duller to the other guy? And he says, no. So he says, so where's the difference lie? You know, what's the distinction between the guy who gets stronger and the guy who falls unconscious? You know, where's the difference lie? It's in the way they see it. It's in their mind. You know, and he says that's the only difference. There's absolutely no difference in their body, and there's no difference in the thing that hit them. It's all mental. And he says, so patience is a state of mind. You know, if you decide that you will put up with these things, you can do it. You know, you can get to a point where the more things hurt you, the more things go wrong, the more your life starts to get worse and worse, you get stronger and stronger. You know, you get more and more inspired. On the other hand, you can be like the coward, you know, and the more things come, the more you start to whine. And the more you start to get upset. And he says, we have to be like the warrior. We have to be like the other one. And he says, it's all a matter of mind. That proves it's a matter of the mind and not something physical. There's no difference in the bodies of those two people. And there's no difference in what happened to them. It's just mental. It's mental strength. And he says, do it. All right. You got that one ready for something? Is it okay? That's nicer. Maybe you should do all of them. this is for Tibetan Track people. I'll give you a moment to write it, okay? This is the answer to one of your homework questions. I'm going to bust your chops a little bit, okay? You got to learn Tibetan more. All right? In the meantime, let's say it, okay? If you're writing it, keep writing. Say, Sem, Ki, Jindang, Tamche, Kombe, Sawachen, Yimbe, Komna, Lawar, Mikirwe, Semgi, Che, Kangyang, Me. Sem means the mind. Jintang is a very difficult word in Tibetan philosophy, and it means the way you see things. The Jintang of ignorance and the Jintang of wisdom are opposite. And that's where the word comes in Tibetan philosophy. Tamche means all of them. Komba means habit. Okay? When you put a head letter on it and a prefix letter on it, it becomes the word for gom, meditation. So they're related. The word for making a habit of something and the word for meditation are related. Okay? Komba. Sawachen means the basis or the root. Yin, it is. What it means is all the different ways that you see things, all the different ways in which you perceive things is all only a matter of your habits, of your mental habits, and you can learn to change them. There's nothing about the way you see the world which is not changeable if you decide to. It's very interesting because it's all a matter of habit. There's nothing fixed in the world. You can see it any way you want. When you do the Yamantaka Tantric Dakye, there's a beautiful section in there. And it says, look, everything is what you decide in a way. So therefore, and then it gets really cool, which I can't go into. But anyway, everything about your life is a matter of how you decide to see it and what kind of mental habits you develop. So you can change and you can learn to put up with anything. But you have to decide, you have to start small. And then eventually you could get to where people could cut your arm open and you wouldn't mind. Okay? You have to start small though. You can do it. It's a matter of habit. Yimbe, komna means if you do make a habit of something. Lawa mingyurwe, which is not easy. Semgi chur, inequality of the mind. Kangyam me, there is none at all. Translated means, there is no quality of the mind that is difficult to attain if you make a habit of it. Because habits are the very root of the way in which we perceive the entire world. It's a matter of habit. It's a matter of what you're used to. Okay, we'll go straight to six. Ready? Close your eyes. Last one. We're going to leave sort of on time.
We are locked in combat with mental afflictions, and in war many wounds are sustained. Ignore then any pain that might come. Smash the foes of anger and such. Conquering these is the thing that makes a warrior. The rest are killing only corpses.
I like this part. What he's saying is, look, we have declared war on the big enemy, which is your own jealousy, your own anger, your own desire, your own pride, and your other mental afflictions. You know, we have declared war on them. I think it happened last course, right? I think everybody signed a declaration of war. Everybody here decided they were going to make war on the real enemy, which is mental affliction. And Master Shantideva says, look, frankly, you're going to take some hits. Okay? Don't think it's going to be all a piece of cake. You know, they will cut you. They will fight back. You know, there's no war that ever existed where somebody didn't get hurt. You know, there's a joke in Tibet, you know, a big war broke out in Kham yesterday and 3 people got injured slightly. You know, that was a Tibetan joke. Anyway, somebody will get cut, and you will get cut. You know, if you fight with a worthy opponent, you're going to take some hits. The end of Rob Roy, really cool. Do you remember? They're having this sword fight for like 20 minutes, and the good guy gets cut to pieces, you know. And then finally he does one of these on the guy's body, you know. And but he looks like he's losing because he's got cuts all over him, his belly's coming out. And then finally at the very end he takes his great sword and goes, you know, and splits the guy in half, you know. But in the meantime, he took a lot of hits and he got a lot of cuts. And Master Shantideva says, don't think this is not a normal war. This is like any other war. You're going to take some wounds. You're going to get cut. You know, there's going to be bad days. And mental afflictions do not go away that easy. Okay? And he says, but if you can fight with them and if you beat them, you're better than those guys who go to Kuwait and shoot people with guns. You know, why? He says, they are killing corpses. You know, and then Gyaltsen Jay says, what does he mean when he says they're killing corpses? Look, they're going to die anyway. You don't have to shoot them. You know, give them a year, give them 2 years, give them 5. You know, something's going to kill them. You know, that's the nature of your body. You know, you don't have to take credit for killing somebody. Their body's going to kill itself. You know, we don't consider this guy a great warrior. You know, so you shoot somebody and he dies a few years earlier than he would have died anyway. The body is mortal. This body will kill itself. You could put this body in, you know, some museum somewhere and feed it and take care of it. It would still kill itself. You know, this body will kill itself. So killing people is not a great achievement. They're like dead already. You're just killing corpses. He says, but if you can kill mental afflictions, now that's something, you know. They last for millions of years. They fight back. They come, they rise like zombies, Night of the Living Dead, you know. Like, you think you finished off desire, and then suddenly one day it just goes boom, you know. And, you know, that's what takes a real hero. That's a warrior. If you can put them down permanently, and you will take some hits. Then you've achieved something. That's a real achievement. We call you a G.I. Joe. You know, you're a real warrior. You know, because you did that. You managed to do that. Okay, we'll read that. Let me make sure I did all the homework for you. One more thing, but read it once more, please. Yeah.
We are locked in combat with mental afflictions, and in war many wounds are sustained. Ignore then any pains that might come. Smash the foes of anger and such. Conquering these is the thing that makes you a warrior. The rest are killing only corpses.
We're going to talk about the 3 kinds of patience, okay? You couldn't have a Galupa class without having the divisions of something, right? So I threw that in at the end. There are 3 kinds of patience, okay? The first is called, say, Dungel, Dangdu, Lembe, Sepa. Dungel, Dangdu, Lembe, Sepa. Dungel means suffering, pain. Okay? Dangdu Lemba means to accept it gladly, to take it gladly. Sepa means a kind of patience. So the first kind of patience, something bad happens, and you say, how can I change this into something positive? Okay? I'm glad this happened. I'm glad I get fired. Now I can go get a real job. You know, I mean, okay? It's like, how do I change this thing around? Lama Sopa wrote a book called Transforming Problems into Happiness. I mean, that's Dunyal Dandalamba Sopa. It means, I'm glad that my boss fired me. You know, wait till he sees this new job I got, you know. More benefits, more pay, less hours, better people to work with, and definitely a better boss, you know. And that's Dunyal Dandalamba Sopa. Dunyal Dandalamba Sopa means, I'm glad I got sick. Now I have a chance to show what a bodhisattva I am. You know, I'm glad they want me to do all the dirty work at the Dharma Center. You know, I'll show them. You know, wait till they see what a really bodhisattva can do. You know, and instead of getting upset or looking negatively at things, you just suck up suffering. Say, come on, give me your best shot. You know, and you just feed on it. You say, I'm glad all these stupid things are happening in my life. You know, now I got a chance to prove myself. Okay, and you turn them into the path. You know, you just turn them into the path. Say, Chöla, Ngepa, Sembe, Sopa. Chöla, Ngepa, Sembe, Sopa. This is a very specific, and the wording is not easy. Chö means Dharma. Ngepa means, in this case, Ngepa means to concentrate. Ngepa Sembe here, in this case, means to concentrate on the Dharma. It's the patience which concentrates on the Dharma. Okay? The patience which concentrates on the Dharma. What does this mean? This is a kind of patience where you believe in the Dharma, you have faith in the Dharma, you have devotion in the Dharma, you have some kind of Dharma drive, some kind of Dharma power, energy, and you are going to focus it on Dharma. Your studies, you don't care what happens. You know, you go into retreat, the bugs come, the snakes come, the sun comes out, you run out of water. This is all like last week, right? And, and you say, I don't care. You know, I'm a yogi, you know, I'm going to meditate, you know. And you just get like that guy who's bleeding, you know. You say, come on, you know, two more snakes can come in the room, I don't care. I'm going to meditate, you know. I don't care if there's 1,000 flies on my face, you know. And you just get stronger, you know, you say... And this comes from some kind of devotion or belief or love for the Dharma. Intense drive to do Dharma. And it puts up with anything. You don't care. You know, okay, my husband doesn't like I go to class. I don't have time to do anything. The kids want dinner. Homework is due in 2 hours. You know, I don't care. I'm going to do it perfect. You know, I'm going to ace that quiz. You know, it's just some kind of guts. It's having guts about your Dharma study. Okay? Third one. Say Nöpa, Chepala, Chi, Minyambe, Sopa. Nöpa, Chepala, Chi, Minyambe, Sopa. Nöpa here means, Nöpa Chepala means when someone does something bad to you, when somebody hurts you, okay? They talk bad about you, they hurt your reputation, they start rumors about you, they cheat you, they lie to you, they do something to you. Okay? Nöpa Chepala. Jiminyamba means I could care less. You know. It's Jiminyamba is very cool. You know, Jiminyamba means I don't care. Okay? Jiminyamba means not to think anything. Okay? No matter what someone does to hurt you. Or to block your happiness. You're like, cool, I'll just find a way to go around them. You know, and you don't worry about it. You don't get upset. You just assess the situation. If you can do something about it, you do it. If you can't, you just go around. Okay? And you just don't get upset. So, I could care less what they do. Okay? And that's Jiminyambi Sopa. Okay? I'll spell this one for you. Chula. And again, number two was the one that puts up with anything for the Dharma because of your drive. You have this Dharma drive. Okay? And you don't care what happens. You have faith in it. You love it. It turns you on. You're going for it. And you don't care what happens. Okay? Whatever problems you get, no problem. Okay? You just go for it. Okay? Okay, I'm having a bad time. Things are happening to me. Let's see how I can turn it into something positive. You know, let me make it the path. It's great. You know, I'm great. I'm so lucky to have such a bunch of lousy friends. They test me. They make me strong. I learn patience. You know, it's perfect. I have the perfect situation. You know, those other people living out in the forest, nice clean air, no traffic, they have no opportunity for Dharma. I got everything here. I got obnoxious people in the street, muggers, dangerous, subway, pollution, traffic jams, lousy office to work in. This is perfect, you know. And you just get excited about using it and sucking it, you know. You say, I can use this. Yeah, I can use this for my practice. Oh, this guy's great. Let me invite him out to dinner, you know. And you just turn the whole world into a bunch of opportunities, okay, like that.
桑耶圣多美德佛罗耶多闻南道圣拉遮巴娑耶当古罗拉南门达拉甘尼亚达亚米格瓦迪格格舍那米耶舍宗罗舍舍那米耶舍勒中文